Thanks for joining us. Tonight's topic is going to be quite interesting, largely because we're going to be recognizing some of the efforts that is done by not just corporates in terms of the efforts of ESG, but generally speaking what the media is doing to actually uphold some of the values and try to propagate the ideas and ideals of ESG. This is because The Edge, the country's most renowned business publication, had their inaugural ESG Awards 2022 and is set out to recognize those that have truly adopted the mantra for business for good and have made positive contribution to business, to society and to environment through successful and impactful ESG practices. So we're going to be deep diving some of the topics pertaining to ESG and why the Edge Awards in terms of ESG is actually quite crucial for us to explore. Joining me in the studio right now is Tan Jayun on net, the editor of the ESG section, here to elaborate more on this. So Nat, let's take a look into first things first. Why is The Edge doing this award? We know that The Edge have many awards, from the Billion Dollar Club to the Property Award, many. But why is it that The Edge is focusing a little bit more on ESG and in fact creating the ESG Awards 2022 event per se?
Yeah, so we started actually our standalone ESG section earlier this year because we really noticed that the momentum on ESG is picking up in corporate Malaysia. And so I know between a conversation between Dato' Ho, our boss, and
this is the Malaysia. Ho Ketat.
Yes, yeah. And our boss, you know, they do also realize that there is a need. With Bursa Malaysia, so Dato' Umar.
Okay.
Yeah, so they do realize that there is a need to recognize the companies that are doing well on ESG. Mm. And so that's why we decided to collaborate together with Bursa Malaysia and FTSE Russell, Morningstar, UOB Malaysia to run these awards.
It's also important for us to explore on the impact that these awards are going to or expected to garner. Do you feel that the award is more than just recognition but also an endorsement on some of the ESG practices that is done by corporate Malaysia?
Yeah, I definitely think so. So the awards, there are two sections to the awards. There's the equities and the funds. So the equities, they are judged according to FTSE Russell's ESG rating methodology, which is the same methodology that is used for the FTSE for Good Bursa Malaysia Index, which is kind of considered a benchmark for ESG in Malaysia. And whereas for the funds, it's Morningstar, which is also a well-known financial services information provider, especially for funds. So I do think that by recognizing companies who are doing well according to this internationally accepted methodologies, It helps companies understand, how am I doing in ESG? Like, how do international ratings agencies evaluate companies on how well they're doing on ESG? So I think it is a learning process for them as well.
All right, of course, equities and funds are both working towards trying to marry or try to uphold the values that has been done by FTSE Russell, Morningstar, and many more. However, the list of exclusion is actually quite important for us to discuss as well. Manufacturers of tobacco, coal, weapons are excluded. Companies that are suspended or under the stock exchange watch list is also excluded. And companies or PLCs that are outside of the FTSE for Good Bursa Malaysia watch list is also excluded. What was the thinking behind the exclusion of this list? Is it also trying to upkeep in terms of the standard that is being held by international rating agencies as well as international standards like FTSE Russell and also Morningstar?
Yes, so the excluded sectors are accepted. Actually, FTSE for Good, they also exclude these sectors. And as for the adverse news, like controversial issues, it is also a common practice for this kind of international rating agencies who look at ESG to filter and screen out companies that have adverse news or controversial news within like a certain time period.
So what would be some of the news that is considered controversial?
Yeah, it could be, let's say, a company is accused of mistreating their labor and the issue is not resolved, for example. So that could be one.
Okay. And also companies that have bad practices or poor practices. This is, of course, a highlight in terms of governance G of the ESG. Would these companies be, say, for instance, excluded or just they're not excluded, but they are, I guess, not in the running for winning an award?
They could be excluded if, let's say, it's an accusation, you know, not just by some random person, but there is solid evidence and there's an investigation going on and the issue has not been resolved. We set a time period of in a year. So those companies would then be excluded.
Let's talk about the industry classification benchmark that is set by that is governing the PLC. Could you elaborate more on that? In terms of the ICB subsector impact categories and minimum climate change scores, some PLCs may not meet the minimum climate change requirements. Would you elaborate more on that that impactful category of being excluded from the list?
Right, so that's actually a methodology set by FTSE. And according to the ICB sector classification, so if you are in an industry that is, higher emissions, they call it a hard to abate industry. So for example, like steel or cement, like the nature of your business, of your operations and your manufacturing means that you will have a higher emissions footprint than, let's say, a cloud services company, where their emissions probably just come from a data center. Uh-huh. So then...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so,
lip service mostly. Okay, got
Well, in the sense that it will be easier for them to reduce their carbon emissions. For example, if I have a data center, it's easier for me to... I can just set up solar panels, I can use renewable energy, but let's say if it's a cement company, my process of creating the cement releases a lot of carbon emissions. It's not a matter of I can just use solar energy and I can reduce my carbon footprint. So that's why different sectors are held to different standards as to, which is what is meant by the climate change threshold. So different sectors are put onto different expectations of how much emissions they must reduce by a certain time. Yeah.
Within the EDGE or within the publication and also the collaboration that you do with the Bursa Malaysia, could you share with us some of the ideas in terms of who is sitting on the panel? How is the award being awarded, I suppose?
Yeah, so there's no panel of judges per se. So, okay, we will look at equities. It's actually based on FTSE Russell's ESG scores. So actually all FBM OMAS companies already have an ESG score because it is our FTSE4Good index is drawn from the companies on OMAS index according to their ESG score. So actually they already all have a score. And so now recently Bursa just expanded this score to all listed companies. So the way that the winners are picked, we have multiple categories like according to market cap, according to sectors. And so the companies with, depending on the methodology, so some of them is the companies with the highest ESG score in that sector, for example, or the company with the highest ESG score CAGR over 3 years, 5 years are selected. So there's no like person subjectively judging.
Before we go into the philosophy of this, one more question in terms of the awards per se. Could you share with us the awards that is being handed out and why these awards are being classified as such, in best newcomer, for instance, best B, E, or best S, best G, for instance?
Yeah, so for equity, we have around six huge categories, and we mainly wanted to award the best winners in different sectors because, like I said, different sectors have different challenges in ESG.
Of course.
Yeah, so that's why we have to recognize the best players in each industry. And also market cap, I think that's a very important point as well because smaller companies just won't have the same resources as bigger companies.
They also pollute less.
They also pollute less, exactly. So that's why I think it's necessary to recognize companies of different sizes. We also have one where we recognize companies with the most consistent performance and also a newcomer award because, again, a lot of the companies that are newly listed, they just started having to follow Bursa's sustainability reporting guideline. And so, you know, I think it's also necessary to recognize these players. And we have an inaugural award, just a one-time award, which is a long-term achiever for the company that has been on the FTSE4Good for the longest. And that, again, is to recognize people who have been doing this for a very long time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before we jump into this, I also want to understand in terms of the scope of the awards, do you feel that these awards are going to be enlarged over time, the way we saw with, say, for instance, the Billion Dollar Club and many more? Or do you feel that the awards categories and the two classifications for funds and PLCs is enough for the time being?
I think in terms of funds and equities, it will just be these two big categories. Whereas within each category, will there be more types of awards? I'm not sure, probably. We did face some issues of like, we wanted to give out some awards, but there just isn't enough data from the companies to justify the awards. So I think as the ESG landscape develops more in Malaysia, probably there will be more.
Sorry, I won't let you go on that one. What do you mean, not enough data?
So let's say, for example, so these are the ones that we do have enough data, but let's say, for example, the fund awards, there's the best E, like best E or best S or best G. This means that there needs to be enough data from companies on their environmental risk and how they're managing it, social risks, how they're managing it. So, you know, I would say that sustainability reporting in Malaysia is still growing. And so there's a lot of data that just is not enough. There's not enough data to justify winners in some categories.
Some research houses have given ESG scoring, for instance. Maybank Investment Banking Group, that I'm familiar with, is already accrediting the companies that they cover with ESG scoring. Do you feel that more research houses need to do something like this in order for us to get a better colour in terms of corporates doing well or not well in ESG?
Definitely. And I think the good thing about Maybank IB's research is actually, so they use information from Sustainalytics, which is actually also under Morningstar. And they also provide their own analysis from their own people about this company. So it's not just an ESG score per se, but they actually provide an analysis of the E, the S and the G. And I think that's what's important and not so much just that number. Even though that number is used for the awards, it's easier. But for companies to really understand how they're doing, it's that analysis that's important, I think.
Okay. Do you feel that PLCs are generally a little bit more intuitive, a little bit more sensitive towards trying to uphold great ESG practices? And do you feel that, you know, having such an award like the ESG Edge Award helps them or basically promotes this behavior to even flourish even further?
I definitely think so. You know, the sense I get from Malaysian PLCs so far is that they're very concerned about ESG, and it's because there's a lot of push from regulators, investors, consumers. They're pushing them to look at ESG. But I do think that it can be quite confusing for them. It's like, oh, how do I know what am I doing? Like, I have had people literally come and ask me, how do I know whether I'm doing enough? And I do think that with these awards, because it's just using FTSE's methodology, it offers them a way of understanding, like, oh, okay, so FTSE has like a methodology and a disclosure sheet where they give companies, and it's like, oh, you have to disclose these things. And I think that helps companies to understand, like, okay, so this is ESG, because ESG is not a new thing. It's not like the UN SDGs per se. I personally think that it's a structure. It's a way for companies to categorize what they're doing under environment, social and governance in a way that's very transparent, so that investors, consumers and anyone, any of their stakeholders can have a better understanding of what the company is doing in these three areas. So that's the steep learning curve, I think.
Of course, having this, you need people to do it. Do you feel that this also requires people with specific skill sets in terms of trying to reinvigorate companies to adopt better ESG practices? Because I don't think that, say, for instance, people with no, you know, existing skill sets are equipped to handle such lofty ideals of upholding great ESG practices. Is this a new job space, basically?
Oh, well, okay. I don't know how much I agree with that, but I think the existing people...
And it's okay to disagree.
No, I have to agree and half disagree. I think existing people can do the job as well, because let's say if it's... for example, they need someone to just look at all the policies that the company currently has. On governance, public listed companies already need to do very well in governance. So they already have governance policies. A lot of companies under social already have different policies for workers' well-being, for gender diversity. And so under... E probably is a bit newer, but a lot of companies already have to do things like wastewater treatment, rainwater harvesting because of regulations. So, you know, they just need someone to sit down, come together and look, okay, what are the existing things that we already have? Where are the gaps? And how can we solve this? Whereas I think the new skill sets might come in someone who needs to understand how to calculate greenhouse gas emissions. What are emissions factors, for example? So probably like someone with a science background could come in. But I know companies that, you know, they have a lot of engineers and they just get the engineers to crunch the numbers. That works too. So, yeah, I think.
Do you feel, so it sounds like, based on your explanation, what is required now is more of a coordinator, one that can actually arrange the kind of pieces that comes together, various data points, and try to present it in a more meaningful way and try to spot improvement areas that needs to be worked on. Is that more or less what you're trying to say?
I think someone who has to understand what ESG is, and then yeah, having that big picture view of getting looking across the entire company.
Do you feel that this role must be shared by the CEO or the CEO himself or herself must do this in order for this values to be permeated across the organization?
For sure. Like, I think not just the CEO, but actually for a lot of companies, it has been the board who has been pushing it. And a lot of the companies that are doing very well, it's the board who has been really championing this that has made it possible. Because it needs someone from the top to say that, okay, let's do this. Let's see what we have and let's see what we can do.
I think okay. One financial institution that I'm familiar with is a bit big on ESG. And from the forums that I had with this individual, the CEO, it's clear that the CEO is clued in terms of what needs to be done, is very familiar in terms of the clients that they advise and they fund or finance. It's also clear in terms of that he's cognizant in terms of the challenges that they need to face. And this is one CEO of a financial institution. All the other CEOs of financial institutions generally have more or less a pedestrian understanding of ESG. Do you feel that if the individual himself or herself do not appreciate the ideas and ideals of ESG, it's very difficult for the values to be practiced across the organization?
I think so, because like for something like ESG to be championed, it needs the leadership of the company to really push.
Yeah, board is one thing. Yeah, this is executive we're talking about.
Yeah, so I think it really needs the leadership of the company, because the CEO, to understand what it is.
Okay, let's go through in terms of from this year's award list. From your view as an editor of the ESG section, do you feel that there are some ingredients to what makes a company do better in ESG as opposed to some companies that do poorly in ESG? While both these type of companies want to do good, one is better. Why are they doing better than the other group, for instance?
Okay, I think for equities, under the equities category, one is definitely not just the board, but the board, the leadership, the CEO's office, they're really pushing for this. I think that's one that really sets them apart. Another one, I think, is also those who have really internalized ESG into their operations.
It's not a slap-on kind of practice.
Yeah, it's not just
practice.
A marketing thing.
Yeah.
Like they have tied some of the ESG, criteria into the KPI of executives. And like from reading through their reports, I can also see that they're transparent with the data that they of what they're doing currently, where are their gaps. Some of them have gone ahead of others and done climate risk assessments, which is not really mandatory at this point.
But they got ahead of the curve.
Yeah, so they have done their climate risk assessments. Some of them have aligned their reporting to international standards like the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. And on the fund side as well, I have to say, some have gone ahead of others to work with international providers to provide ESG funds before the rest of the companies did. And some have found very good feeder funds in ESG abroad. But they are offering it to retail investors in Malaysia as well, which is very, very good, very fascinating, because sometimes ESG in the fund space can be quite high net worth investors. But opening this space to retail investors, it's a really great avenue, I think.
The old adage of a board's role is to ensure that they execute their fiduciary duties to their shareholders. The job of the executive, chief executive onwards or downwards, is to ensure that the maximum profitability and ensuring that the shareholders' value and wealth is actually improved. That is, of course, what is wealth can be debated, but the idea here is their responsibility at board as well as executive is to ensure that the shareholders' interests are managed. Do you feel that ESG practices can actually help bottom line and actually help brand awareness and brand equity in terms of their consumers and clients across all the sectors that they operate in? Or do you feel that this is just one more thing that they have to do and therefore it might hurt their bottom line and therefore basically harm companies that want to do better in ESG because it doesn't help the bottom line?
I think on brand awareness first, I think definitely, because right now investors and consumers, especially in the Western markets, really do give value to companies that are trying to do better in sustainability.
I buy Patagonia because of this, by the way.
Exactly, me too. I love them. So that's on the brand awareness side. But on the bottom line side, I do think that it makes sense as well. So if we take a long-term lens, especially for some companies, their assets are really at risk of, if you talk about climate change impacts. So if their assets are in places that are easily flooded, like we do have projections in Malaysia about which areas will face like over 100% potential of flooding in like 2050.
Or yeah, of course.
And so, you know,
it doesn't have to be 2050. there's a website called Climate Course, I think something like that. And there's a slider in terms of areas to be potentially flooded around the world, including Malaysia. You just slide it across and you can see areas like Murib, for instance, or PD, or some places
Klang.
In Perak. Klang, yeah. And what was interesting is that I spoke to a fund manager and he's about this particular topic, this very existing topic, and he was talking to me about, hey, do you know where our power plants are generally located? I say, I have no idea. And said, you know, it's at the seashore. So yeah, so you know, we're gonna have greater amount and frequency of flooding. We're gonna have security issues on power or energy, and of course, not to mention the most impactful thing, which is climate refugees. Mm-hmm. So you know, these kind of items, you know, while we know that the funds and as well as equities might not necessarily have the wherewithal in terms of addressing nationwide issues, but you know, something has to be done, right? And of course, we're seeing this done in the corporate sector. So yeah, I feel that we need to do more in this space. But how do you think this is going to impact, say, the public space or the government space? Do you feel that they're going to be inspired and do more there, for instance, following these kind of awards?
Oh, I think so too. Because I one thing I've noticed that's very interesting in Malaysia is that the private sector, through groups like the Climate Governance Malaysia or CEO Action Network, they have been engaging with the government as well, government officials on all these climate change matters or ESG matters. So they're, and the reason that the companies are doing this is because they all have their own net zero goals and their climate risk assessments. But let's say climate risk assessments, in order to do it accurately, they need data from the government. Because the government is the one who will have projections and scientific data on, you know, granular data on which areas will be flooded and sea level rise. And so they need to work together with the government in order to make their climate risk assessments work. Same thing for their net zero plans. They can't achieve it if the grid is still majority fossil fuel, right? So they need the government to do that. So I do think that this will push the public sector to change as well. But at the same time, the public sector is also pushing the private sector to change, right?
Yeah.
So I think it'd be very interesting to see where this dynamic goes.
Let's talk about inspiration to the market and the clients and the consumers and the customers out there. Do you feel that these kind of awards, especially the awards that you've you just did, the Edge ESG Awards 2022, is going to inspire the market side to ensure that they are more aware of the brands that they are interacting with and how they spend their money in terms of interacting with these brands? Do you feel that the market, at least Malaysia, can be a little bit more progressive in terms of wanting more from the brands that they interact with?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, I personally would say yes.
But you're biased, of course, you're the ESG editor, of course, you'll say that. But no, I mean, you know, objectively speaking, yeah.
Whether or not they are doing it, I don't know. Like, I don't know, but I mean,
they want the cheapest product, that's there.
Exactly, yeah. And I wouldn't blame them either, right?
Of course.
But I do think that we can ask more from investors. So that could be retail investors as well. I think they need to ask these questions during the AGMs. They need to ask these questions as a shareholder. You know, what is the company going to do in terms of ESG? Like, do they have a good workers policy? Like, do they have contingency plans for flooding, for, let's say, lower agriculture yield because of higher temperatures? I think we can put that on investors. Like, investors have to ask these questions.
Mm. Okay, fun question, at least for Notepad. I want to learn more about what is the biggest learning that you had as the editor of the ESG section in doing this award personally?
Ooh, these awards. The steepest learning curve for me was understanding the methodology. Because I understand, so there are a lot of criticisms about ESG.
Nobody graduates with ESG degree, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
maybe
for
not
sure.
Yet.
So see, this is the thing, it's really hard to put like what a company is doing into a number, right? And right now, what a lot of the ESG ratings does, like globally, there other than FTSE, there are a lot of other rating agencies. It's a struggle like how they have to get all this publicly disclosed information from companies and then check boxes, did the company disclose this? Did the company disclose this? So this is in terms of transparency. They want to make sure that the company discloses all these things publicly under ESG. Then the next step is, okay, the company might say, I have this policy. How effective it is? So that's the hard part. Like, how can you assess whether a company is doing what they say they're doing? And I think that's the next step of where all this ESG analysis and ratings agencies are looking into.
Sorry, you're hinting into my space now, because as an accountant, you know, I just pick up any financial report of any sector in any market, and I'm familiar with it straight up. But to get to that point, you know, it was a whole journey of a 200 years worth of continuous improvement in financial reporting. And then, you know, only in the past 40 or 50 years did associations like Chartered Institute of Management Accountants add on to that and present management accounting as an element of conversations, not just financial reporting. But this, it's a two-century conversation, right? But we have to start somewhere. Do you feel that, you know, this is an area that is going to be, our ESG reporting at least, is going to be so standardized to a point where anybody can just report it and it's uniformed across markets and users can just pick up the report and understand it across markets the way we do with, say, financial reporting and management reporting?
I think that's the goal. So right now, the ISSB is trying to do that because we have so many different reporting standards. So ISSB is trying to come up with this unified standard.
So what is IISB?
ISSB, I do not remember the full name.
Okay.
But they're an international organization where they're trying to come up with a unified reporting standard using taking from what is already existing and making a unified one.
Okay, go on. So sorry about that.
Yes,
So ISSB is trying to make this.
Yeah, they're trying to standardize reporting. And across different regions as well, they're trying to come up with taxonomies, so ESG, SRI taxonomies, to make sure that all the companies are using the same terminologies, reporting on the same thing. In ASEAN, there's also a lot of activity on that as well. So yeah, I think with more of this, same language, same reporting, it will happen.
Okay, fantastic. That was our conversation with Nat Tan Jayun, the ESG editor at The Edge. Do check out their most interesting event in terms of trying to understand better how you, as a user or investor or a company leader, in trying to understand better about the Edge ESG Awards. I'm sure it's going to be done every year. Is it going to be done every
year?
Hopefully. Okay. Hopefully it's going to be done every year. But very recently, they just did it, the ESG Awards 2022. So do check that out on their official websites. In the meantime, Nat is still going to appear on another show of ours called Niaga Awani. So do check that out, where we go in detail in terms of who won and who lost there. Also, Astra Awani is proud to be a partner with The Edge in terms of trying to promote ESG practices. We have plenty of resources on ESG. Check out on all our resources on all Astra Awani's platforms. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.